Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Lord of the Inferno, Volume 2 of War of the Fathers. Hello and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week we are continuing to read Lord of the Inferno. Last week we read, Adar landed on the turncoat's arm, covering the top of the blaster as he did. His eyes met the turncoat's as he pulled out his oakwe blade. Laughter danced in the turncoat's eyes, but it ended a second later. Slamming the blade into the turncoat's neck, Adar flipped back the face shield with his other hand and stabbed the black blade into the man's eye, pushing it all the way in. A silver covering had formed on the neck by that time, so for good measure he went through the other eye as well, this time pausing to turn the blade before bringing it out. He nodded his head when he saw there wasn't any silver cover forming on the remains of either eye. Adar sheathed his oakwe blade, even though it was bloody, and picked up the dead turncoat's blaster and spun around the area to make sure that the danger had passed. Nir had his sword out and was doing the same while Arrow stared at the dead turncoat. After a few moments had passed without anything else happening, Nir took Arrow by the arm and dragged him away. Before they disappeared, Nir looked back and gave Adar a slight nod of his head. And now? Chapter 9. Once Nir and Arrow disappeared, Adar retrieved the blasters from the dead Hunway turncoats and ducked into the home. He did not want to leave them lying around for Nir or anyone else to pick up. Nir had left before the stress of the situation had given him a chance to think about what he was leaving behind. Once he did, he would realize he had missed an opportunity to pick up a blaster or two. On the second floor, Adar found a bedroom and stuffed the extra blasters underneath the bed, careful to lift the blasters over the dust on the wooden planks, so it was not obvious that something had been placed there. He looked around the room, wondering if there might be a less obvious place, but nothing jumped out at him. An old dresser would have fit the weapons in a dark corner beside a desk as well, but he figured that they were all natural places to look if somebody came in here hoping to find something. I better hope that they don't come back right away, Adar thought when he looked back at the trail of water he had left on the wooden floor. I should have stopped to kick the rain off my boots. The wood was untreated and would hopefully absorb his tracks quickly, but that would be cold comfort if the next time Adar saw Arrow was down the wrong end of a blaster. Adar had never thought he'd be glad that most of the burned Hunway destroyed their own blasters. It had been difficult to figure out how to get them to work, and Adar didn't doubt that Nir and Arrow would be able to figure it out given enough time. He hesitated and stared at the bed, wondering if he should bring another blaster with him. He was down to one working blaster plus a spare, and having extras kept coming in handy. So does that ridiculous-looking dagger, he thought. If I'd known what the Oakwe was giving me, I would have given him gold coins and tried to buy some more. The Oakwe short swords had not been covered in the black tar-like residue, but Adar did not see any reason why a sword that had been similarly treated wouldn't work just as well. He wouldn't do something like that to his Redeem sword, but he wouldn't hesitate to do that to a cheaper weapon. He had tried to keep count of the number of shots he got from a blaster, but he had been unable to be exact. And from what he could tell, they all appeared to stop working at random times. One blaster he'd been able to use for a greater number of shots, the next had been far fewer. Perhaps they all had the same capacity, and it depended on how many shots the previous owner had used. That was something to think about. He went back downstairs. He still had two blasters, and carrying the additional one while also lugging around his sword was already a bit much, not to mention adding a couple more. He would just have to return for these when he could. Because Nir and Arrow might be watching the front of the home, Adar returned out the back door and moved from there towards the street. He didn't want them to think to look in the home for the blasters. Who am I trying to fool? He wondered. Chances are good they will stumble across a couple of dead Hunway with working blasters anyway. How many did it take for me? 5? 10? He didn't like the idea of having to keep an eye out for Nir and Arrow as well as Hunway turncoats in terror, but a man did what he had to do. Adar wouldn't put it past Nir to ambush him, despite Nir's conciliatory words to the contrary. Adar paused before coming out into the open of the street to check either direction. He had thought that Arrow and Nir would have already disappeared, but they were several blocks away, walking in the middle of the street. Arrow had stopped struggling and they were moving quickly. Arrow looked back over his shoulder. When he saw Adar, he scowled and dug in his heels. Nir noticed what Arrow was doing and pulled him along all the faster. Nir probably expects I'll change my mind about letting Arrow go, Adar thought, shaking his head. At another day and time, Adar wouldn't have hesitated to kill anybody that was attacking him with a sword, regardless of who they were. Now he found the thought of killing another person he didn't need to a little discomforting. Why do the Hunways work for them? Every man that lives through this and every woman and child that isn't taken captive is another victory. After Nir and Arrow had disappeared into a home, Adar hesitated before pushing out into the street himself. He expected to see Tear step out of the shadows while pointing a blaster his way, or Arrow charging again like a man insane. The wind had picked up and it pelted rain against Adar's skin, making his teeth want to chatter. He clenched his jaw to keep that from happening. Being drenched didn't help matters, but it did mean that Tear would plan his ambush somewhere he had protection against the storm. As Adar passed a couple of Hunway corpses, he checked to make sure that the blasters were destroyed before moving on. He was happy to see that the barrel of one was melted and the other had broken in half and melted to the corpse of the Hunway beside it. He wasn't sure if it was just him getting used to the smell of the dead Hunway or if it was getting better. Either way, it wasn't bothering him as much as it had been before. He turned when he saw movement in the window of a home. A head disappeared. There hadn't been much for him to see, but by the length of the hair, he assumed it had been a woman. If he hadn't seen the hair, he would have gone to investigate to make sure that he wasn't about to pass by Tear. It was probably a local woman who had hid because she saw his blaster. He continued on. A block or so down, he came to an alley that went in the direction he was headed, so he ducked in, preferring to scrape through tight places than wondering who was watching him pass. He had not made it very far before he heard voices and approaching footsteps coming from a connecting alley. He hesitated, thinking of Arrow and Nir, and even though they had gone the other direction, he decided to duck behind some water barrels to be safe. Well, safe enough, he amended, after closer inspection of his hiding spot. Anybody that looked over the area would probably spot him, but he didn't have enough time to run back the other way. Moss grew along the sides of the barrels. They might have started life with a varnished exterior, but they had been laid bare through the ravages of time, sun, and weather. The water level in the first was almost empty, and the other was just over half full. The smell from the water wasn't enticing, but it did feel good to smell something other than the scorched flesh of the Hunway. Lightning flashed across the sky as Adar positioned himself. When he blinked, he could still see the image of it behind his eyelids. It was close enough he didn't get past the count of two before a peal of thunder crashed overhead. At least there's no doubt that came from the storm and not a Hunway ship, he thought. As the men approached, Adar ducked and wrapped his finger around the trigger of his blaster. While he was glad that he had stayed his hand with Arrow, it had been a mistake to drop the blaster and go for the sword. The next time I make a fool mistake like that, he thought, it's likely to be me that dies. Does it really matter if I kill with the sword or a blaster? Dead is dead. The thought made him feel uncomfortable, and he wasn't able to determine if that was caused by his cold logic or the fact that he didn't want to accept the changes that would come if blasters became widespread. Here I am, he thought, fighting for my life, but I am more worried about the long-range consequences of the technology that I can't even understand, let alone replicate. He pushed away his concerns, resolving to use a blaster defensively against another human being if he needed to, regardless of his concerns. Two men turned the corner at the intersection of the alleys. Adar could see their legs from in between the curves of the two barrels. The little he could see was enough for him to tell that he wasn't looking at Tear or Karn. The clothing was wrong, and one of the men had a sword on his belt. Both Karn and Tear wore their swords on their back, as did all members of the Redeem armies. Adar was on the verge of relaxing until he was able to make out their conversation as they drew closer to where he hid. You didn't recognize this man. You're sure he was coming from out of town. The voice of the speaker heaved as if he had been running, but there was something more to it than that. The tone communicated repressed anger. There must have been a response that Adar had not heard because the man continued. What was she playing at? The man growled. How many times do I have to tell Tate to stay away from her? Tate, Adar thought. That was the man who had been forcing himself on Kira. His ears picked up, and he gripped his blaster as he waited for them to pass. Once they did, he looked out and recognized the back of one of the men belonged to Billy. So, the fat little man had managed to escape from the Hunway turncoats. Adar was surprised, but given the luck he'd been having today, perhaps he should not have been. Adar did a double take on the other, his instincts telling him that it was Tate, even though the man had just been talking about Tate. Frowning, Adar realized this man was a little taller, with thicker shoulders. His hair might have been a lighter color than Tate's, but it was difficult to tell as it was matted against his head by the rain. Other than those subtle differences, the two could have been twins. Even their clothes were almost a match for each other. Isaac, Adar thought, remembering the conversation that he'd had with Billy. Tate's brother, and they're looking for me. He grunted. I shouldn't have left Billy alive, but it had seemed too much like murder to just kill him. This was not Rarbon, where Adar was the general of an army and could enforce the law. Hurry up, Isaac called over his shoulder. Billy had fallen a few steps behind. The pudgy man struggled to breathe and almost tripped over a rock. He slowed to a stop and leaned against the brick wall of the home. Without thinking about what he was doing, Adar brought up his blaster and pointed it at the passing men. He ducked further behind the barrels when Isaac turned. Billy mumbled something Adar was not able to make out, his wheezing combined with the rain to make comprehension impossible. Adar's finger had not been near the trigger, but hadn't he been considering whether to shoot these men in the backs? Bloody Melia, he thought. I've only just decided that I'll use a blaster if necessary, and here I am thinking of shooting men in the back. The bloody weapon makes killing too easy. By the gods, man, Isaac returned to Billy and pulled him away from the wall. My brother's lying with a slit throat, and you have the gall to talk to me about needing to catch your breath? Billy said something that was once again inaudible. The tone had an apologetic sound to it. When Adar lifted his head several heartbeats later, they had disappeared. He waited for a couple more seconds before coming out of his hiding place. As he stared in the direction they had gone, he figured the men were about 5 blocks from the tavern where he had killed Tate. Billy and Kira had spoken of Isaac as if he had men at his command. It probably wouldn't be long before Isaac brought other people to help him look. 9 burning hells, Adar thought. If it's not one thing, it's another. The arches would transport him out of the city in a blink of an eye. It's taken me long enough that Terra could be halfway to Rarbon by now if he didn't stop to lay in wait for me. When Adar reached the intersecting alleyway, he paused and peered in the direction that Billy and Isaac had just come from. A group of armed men rushed his way. Cursing, he turned back, and rather than risking the barrels again, he chose to run in the direction that Billy and Isaac had just gone, retracing his own steps down the alley. He didn't slow when he got to the street, afraid the men behind him had already entered the alleyway as well. Luckily, the street was clear. He went the opposite direction that Isaac and Billy would have gone. He dove behind a bush. It was in the front yard of a home that had red paint peeling off the wood siding. The ground between the home and the bush was a garden overgrown with weeds. The roof was in desperate need of repair. He turned himself about and went up on a knee while bringing up his blaster, preparing to fire if they came looking for him. The men didn't stop when they hit the street and headed after Isaac, running as if they knew the exact spot where Tate had died. The tavern was probably a favorite spot of theirs. Kira was likely somebody they knew well. 10 men, Adar thought. I should have slit Billy's throat as well. When they don't find me, they're going to blame her. He pushed back the guilt he felt about the danger she was in and tried to tell himself that having the blaster would be enough for her, but he knew that was not true. He would have difficulty handling 12 men with the weapon, not to mention the fact that it could stop working at any time. He hesitated about what to do as he watched them run. She was a savvy woman. She could handle herself. She didn't even thank him for rescuing her. Adar knew the type, the prickly woman that would almost have preferred to have something bad happen to her than be rescued by a man. I wouldn't want to be rescued by a woman either, he thought, or by anyone. If he were to go after the men, what then? He would be forced to take them all down. He could wait until they found Kira and then help, risking detection and capture while he waited. If she were smart, she would have already left town. He would have to hope that Kira had done just that. After the men had disappeared, a door opened. A woman exited the home that Adar had almost stopped to investigate but had decided against. When he saw that she had a blaster, he groaned. She looked both ways before crossing the street and headed to the bush where he hid. "You in there?" Kira asked when she got closer. She had changed clothes and was no longer wearing a dress. The coat, blouse, breeches, and boots she wore looked suitable for the woods. She shivered as she wiped the rain out of her face with one hand while holding the blaster with the other. At least she hadn't yelled out to him, waving her arms while crossing the street. He would have appreciated it, though, if she had waited to speak until she was closer to the bush, and only then if she used a whisper. Adar hesitated, but remaining silent wouldn't keep her from talking more, so he stood and beckoned her with his blaster while holding a finger to his lips. "How long have you been following me?" He made a point of whispering, something he was glad to see she noticed when she replied. "Do you realize what kind of trouble you've caused me?" Kira's blaster was pointed his way, but her finger wasn't on the trigger, and her hand wasn't covering the button of the stock. He reached out and moved it until it was pointing a different direction. He didn't know enough about how these worked to want the wrong end of one pointing his way, even if he was reasonably certain that it would not go off. Trouble. Most people would say thanks to the man that saved them from a couple of armed men. "I had the situation under control," Kira said. Adar's laugh was grim. "Your hands and feet were tied, and they were about to cut off your clothes. What were you going to do, bludgeon them to death with your head?" She scowled. "I could still kick with my feet." "That wasn't going to get you anything more than a black eye or two. It might have even ended up costing more, if not your life. They were right where I wanted them." "Tell yourself whatever you need." Adar pushed past her to the alley. People like her made him want to not help the next time he ran into a situation like that. But gratitude or no, he would do it again anyway. He had saved her life twice today, what with the arming of the tower in addition to slitting Tay's throat. "Look," Kira said, sighing. "I'm going about this all wrong. I need your help." "You have an interesting way of asking for it." Adar did not stop as he headed into the alley, checking first to make sure that a second group of men wasn't coming after the first. Seeing that it was clear, he went in with Kira close on his heels. "Isaac does not forgive or forget. When he cannot find me, he'll take it out on those I love." "Why are you here with me, then? You should take your people and flee." "Isaac is hardly the best reason to leave. The city isn't a safe place anymore. The gods only know how many humans in Hunway armor there are running around this town. I've already killed half a dozen. I assume there are at least a couple more. And don't think this doesn't mean the Hunway won't come back, either." When he saw her scowl, he softened his tone. Maybe he could do something for her. "How long will it take to gather your friends and family? I can have you miles away from Isaac and the city by nightfall." "I'm not going to abandon Zekerani," Kira said. "This city is the only thing I know, and it's home to thousands of people. They aren't going to leave either, unless you want to take everybody with you." Adar shrugged and turned. "Suit yourself." She grabbed his shoulder. "Isaac needs to be stopped." "Have you listened to a single word I've said?" Adar asked. "Isaac isn't the problem." Kira paused, her eyes narrowed. "I watched you fight those other men back at that house. I saw you spare the life of that kid. By rights, you should have taken his head without another thought. Zekerani needs somebody like you. Isaac was already positioning himself to become the next governor. Governor Voggs barely had control of the city as it was. I fear he won't be able to do anything with the chaos other than let the city burn. Isaac needs somebody to oppose him. He isn't the type of man that should be in power." Adar stared at her, not quite believing what he was hearing. How was she not able to see what was in front of her face? "The governor's mansion was the first thing to go when the Hunway attacked," Adar said. "There wasn't a wall left standing when I last saw it. If Voggs was in there, he is dead. Isaac won't be far behind him if he tries to take control of the city. Isaac will become the governor of rubble, and then he will die." Kira's mouth opened, but Adar spoke right over her. "I've got my own problems to solve right now, and you're concerned about the wrong things. You're welcome to come with me, but—" "Hide." Kira pointed past Adar down the alley. A group of five men turned the corner and ran towards them. When the man in front spotted Kira, he let out a yell that was echoed by the others as he unsheathed his sword and charged. Those behind him pulled theirs out as well. "Melia's nine bloody burning hells." Adar went to his knee, brought up his blaster, and fired. He should have just left her alone. She wasn't happy about the interference anyway, seeing as how she had things under control. The man in front had just enough time to look confused and shocked before the blast took him in the stomach. The blast continued on and through the chest of a man behind him. Beside him, Kira brought up her own blaster and fired as well, but it went high, slamming into a building. "Stand down," Adar said as he fired again. "I got this." This time, he brought down one man while the blast cut through the arm of another, severing it at the elbow. Adar went to his knees as the last man fled. Adar fired a final time, but the man turned the corner at the last second. The blast missed and disappeared down the alleyway. The man with the missing arm whimpered as Adar approached. "Let's see the wound." Scowling, the man lunged with the dagger that Adar had not noticed in his own hand. Before Adar could react, there was a blast and the man went down. "Thought you could use the help," Kira said as she looked down at her blaster in wonder. Adar stared at her. The blast had come from within inches of his shoulder. He had been too cavalier in handing her the weapon and showing her how to use it. "I had it handled," Adar said. "I also won't be much good to you without a shoulder." He pointed at the hole she had made in the wall of the home where her initial blast had gone. "There might be people on the other side of that." "Don't look at me. You're the one that fired down the alley without knowing what is at the other end. You had better hope that some mother and her children weren't down there." That was a fair point, but Adar did not want to admit it. He had been caught up in the moment. "Stick with me if you want," he said, "but I'm leaving." She looked like she had something more to say, but he didn't stop to listen as he moved down the alley. He didn't make it far before he realized that Kira was close behind. It would have been nice if they could have afforded the time to stop so she could practice with the blaster. He avoided looking at the bodies of the men he had killed while he passed by them. "I wouldn't have handled that half so easily without a blaster," he thought. He couldn't remember the last time he had killed a man without taking a scratch, and here he had taken down three without most of them getting close to swing a sword at him. When they arrived at the intersecting alleyway, Adar was ready in case the last man was waiting in ambush, but the way was clear. He had a feeling he should have chased down the man. Isaac would probably be examining the body of his dead brother when the escaped man showed up to report that he had contact with Adar and Kira. "Bloody burning Melia," Adar thought as he picked up speed, and was glad to see Kira didn't have any trouble keeping up with him. "Why in the nine burning hells did I get mixed up in this?" That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.